I was just saying, the combination of that and the cover was enough to get me to go, oh, I should probably watch this.
Well, you're going to hear all of it.
I'm glad I didn't.
Should we just start? Should we just wait for Sean? What do we? I know Alex is not going to make it.
We should just start because I have to watch the Washington Commanders lose to the Cincinnati Bengals in an hour and 15 minutes. So,
All right, then let's run it up. Here we go. Welcome to the podcast. That's right.
ah,
The podcast. We're at
we're
half
back.
speed. We're
Yeah,
back. Well, half of us are back.
half of
The
us are
rest of us
back.
are Sean and Alec.
Well, Sean will be showing up here momentarily, probably. And in a strange change of events, Alec is actually sucking Sean's dad's dick.
Yeah, but Sean had to watch, right? Because he's got to learn a thing or two.
You don't know how true that is.
You know what I'm
It
saying?
hurts. Yeah. So yeah,
Homeboy's become complacent. He's sitting on his laurels.
we watched Coraline this week. Well, technically, we watched it last week. We didn't have a show last week, so
Yeah. Technically, you watched it anyway.
we watched Coraline. I'm excited to talk about it. But Gogs and I, before the show officially started recording, we're in the rare cases where we actually watched a bunch of movies.
Oh my God, yeah.
So Gogs, without any further ado, what did you watch over the last 2 weeks?
So I watched a shit ton of fuck.
A shit ton of fuck.
I watched.
Oh my God.
I'm gonna call it 4.5 films.
Four and a half. That is a lot.
Yeah, I watched 4.5 things.
Okay.
Actually, I would give myself 4.5 and like 1/16 of things. I can't
Oh,
do that
wow.
math right now.
One
But I
six.
can
Get
do that. I would say four.
some Scott
Some
Steiner
Scott
math
Steiner math,
going on.
real quick before we do it. What's a better promo? And I think I already know the answer, but I
Okay.
just want to feel the room out. Scott Steiner math or Macho Man cream of the crop? Because I can quote almost both of them verbatim.
Steiner math, probably. I'm gonna have
Steiner
to see.
math's real good.
Just because it's so absurd. I mean, cream of the
Well,
crop is also great, but it's great because of the visual aids of him keep he keep produce he
the
keeps
close-up
well he keeps producing the creamer, which is hilarious.
magic. Yeah, like there's something about the way he opens that interview that is just,
I
it's like,
mean,
I am justifiably in a position I'd rather not be in.
Randy Savage is the fucking man, so.
He really is. Like, it was. I also came to a weird conclusion that I think my father and the Macho Man Randy Savage have the exact same cadence and speech pattern. Just my dad says it in like sort of a weird wholesome way, but like he were to do in if he were to say the things he says in the way
Right.
that he says them, like
In the
in the
Macho
order.
Man
If you were to
parlance.
do it in the if he did it in the Macho Man voice, it would fit. Like the order of words that he says and the way he says it. I
That's
was
pretty
like.
funny.
It's like that's exactly something my father would say. He just didn't say it in the yeah. So anyway, I watched all these things. Let's look at the things I barely watched, and then we'll talk about things I fully watched.
right.
I started watching this movie called, and this was because I was telling TJ, I let the band play on. Like I just let.
Which is absurd. Like you started watching a movie on Shudder and then you just let it autoplay
I
after
let
that,
just pick the next thing.
which has got to be one of the that's like it sounds like a challenge. Like it's crazy. Like I can only imagine what they showed you. You know what I mean?
So what it
Because
showed me was,
we love Shudder, right? But like there is a
oh
lot of
man,
junk
a lot of
on
schlock,
Shudder.
a lot of schlock
Yeah.
on Shudder. So I started watching. It's a 2024 film. I'll probably finish it because I'm curious how it ends. But it's called All You Need Is Death. Okay.
I saw that again. Great title. I saw it when I was flipping through Shudder.
So I started watching it basically by accident. And it is bizarre. It is about these two people that are like hunting around, I can't tell if it's Ireland or Scotland, trying to find ancient songs that have never been heard or recorded before, and them
Okay.
collecting them for some reason.
Well, how would you find a song that hasn't been heard? How
No,
do
no,
they
no, no,
how...
no, no. Find a song that hasn't been recorded.
Oh, okay.
So you're like looking for basically like folk people that have like some variation of some, but it's all in Gaelic, so it's all hair to hair to hair.
Yeah, I see.
Right, that, but like, it's that, all that moany.
That is what Gaelic sounds like. Hey, to hobbit, hobbit, hobbit.
Right, like it's all that, and it's like sounds like it's all guttural and banshee, and there's these two people trying to. I don't know what their end game is, mm-hmm. So it's weird. I bet it ends up being that they can't something summons a witch or some such. That's just the vibes I'm getting.
This is a fictional film, correct?
It's not this a, is like a fictional. This is a fictional
documentary
film.
Or something.
And at the time where I turned it off, it's these couple had been, like I'm saying, hunting for sounds, and it was now flashing back to like Neolithic, like fucking. Right. Caveman, like tribal Pictish eras, and then I turned it off because it was now 3 a.m. I had to go to bed. So I watched a chunk of that. I need to go back to that. I watched a chunk of a movie called The Fun House from 1981.
I've seen that. Yeah, that's the old
where they're
one.
Like they're going to a carnival. It's kind of wild. Rocking pair of cans.
It's one of those like kind of forgotten. You know, it's a VHS classic. It's not it's not great, but it has its moments, sure.
Yeah, so I'll finish that too. So those are like the 1/2 and 1/16 things I watched. Now, these are the things I watched in to completion. And let's start with the best thing that I watched. I revisited Tony Todd's Candyman.
Oh, yeah.
From 1992.
I think, oddly enough, Sean watched it as well. If I'm not mistaken, but I don't know if he watched it this week. He didn't mention it to me in analog. So
movie holds up. The movie's better. Honest to God, better than I remember. And I remember liking it. Like Tony Todd's great. Virginia Madsen's great. The tone is just, it's like mysterious and sexy. And like, it's got a very Hellraiser vibe, right? Clive Barker's going to do that. The story, the idea of Candyman is great. It's like, it's just really well made, and it's like haunting. It's brilliant. Like it's real goddamn good. Like, and it then made me reflect on the remake that they did within the last 2 years.
It's not very good.
And it was not very good.
It was ultimately like kind of confusing. Like I really don't understand. Like, I don't know the point they were trying to make with that movie. It was very, I don't know. I really wanted to like it, but it was not very good.
And what just a brilliant casting decision with Tony Todd as the Candyman. Like, he is just oozing charisma. Like, his voice is perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Like the whole, my victim, be my sacrifice. Like, that whole bit is just so goddamn good. And then in the end, like, the redemption arc that Virginia Madsen's character has, but then she becomes the ghoul.
Yeah, it haunts you,
like, that's fucking great. Like,
it's very, very Tales from the Crypt ending.
It's super good. So it holds up. I loved it. Still have loved it. Love it more somehow now. So big for 1992s.
Are you going to go watch the sequel now?
I've seen the sequel.
I forget what the sequel is called. But
Farewell to the Flesh.
Farewell to the Flesh. That's it.
I don't remember liking that one as much.
Yeah, I remember hating it, it's funny. I remember the reaction of not liking it, but if you ask me to explain anything about that movie, I don't remember. So maybe it's due for, maybe I'm due for a movie marathon with the two of those.
A little back to backer.
Yeah.
I remembered another movie I watched that I forgot about. Yeah. Thank you, Shudder. Did you ever watch Host?
Yeah, the monster movie.
No, the lockdown movie where they have a seance over Zoom and they invoke a spirit and it starts killing all of the people on the Zoom call.
No, I thought you meant the Bong Joon-ho movie. That's The Host. You ever seen that? That's real.
No, this is just regular ass Host. It's not as good.
I've never seen Host, no.
I've not seen Bong Joon-ho's The Host, but I can promise you this is not excellent. As good.
You should watch The Host. It's really good. It's like a Godzilla movie. It's great. Ooh,
love Godzilla movie. The host is not great, but it was a product of its time, right? It's a weird 2020 movie.
It's like an internet movie, you said?
It's literally it takes place on a Zoom call.
Oh, I see.
Like these kids everyone's, can only hang out. I don't actually say because of COVID or if it's just for some other reason.
Now that you mention this, I do kind of remember seeing people talk about this movie. So, yeah.
I think there's a similar movie called, like, Uninvited or Unfriended.
Unfriended. Yeah. That whole movie takes place during, like, or that the whole movie takes place through the internet, if I remember, like browser windows and stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So we saw that. I rewatched. Once again, this was just fed to me by Shudder. I think right off to Candyman, it threw me right into House of a Thousand Corpses.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You've seen that before, though, right?
Oh, I have. It's not good.
No.
It's but there's not things very... about it I like.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's things about it I do enjoy, but there's, like, on the whole, like there's vignettes that I think are good. But as
there's like two minute bits of that movie that aren't bad, but overall it's kind of shit.
Right, I think we're on the same page here. I think we both feel like he knocked it out of the park with The Devil's Rejects.
The second one is the only good Rob Zombie movie. I mean, yeah. Now that's a movie I probably do to rewatch. But yeah, I like that movie. That movie's frustrating to me because I felt like, oh, he's kind of found his niche. He's found his kind of voice. And then he hasn't made anything worthwhile since. Like, he hasn't done a thing that I've liked after that. So, yeah, but I do remember liking Devil's Rejects quite a bit.
But this is like, this thing wants to be, this the problem with House of a Thousand Corpses, it wants to be like four different movies.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't execute any of them particularly.
It wants to be
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It wants to be fucking. It wants to be like a Manson family tale. It wants to be this like weird. It
wants to be like an Italian Frankenstein horror movie.
Exactly.
Well, then you know the problem is, you know what movie it doesn't want to be? Its own movie. It has like no identity of its own. It's just very it's the same. It's the argument. I think that movie is more. Oh my God.
Are you just listening to mariachi music? What are you doing?
It sounded like a harmonica.
It didn't sound like a concertina?
No, I think that movie better takes the argument that people say about Tarantino movies, right? Like Tarantino, everybody's like, oh, he just rips off other movies. It's like, well, no. If you want a movie that just rips off other movies, watch House of a Thousand Corpses. Like, it has no personality of its own. It's just ripping off a movie. And Rob Zombie's not a good enough writer to, like, you know, rise above the homages. You know what I mean?
It's very, very derivative.
Sean's here. He was playing harmonica. Hey. That's who just popped in.
All right.
Sean, do you have any thoughts on House of... Gog's watched, like, 150 movies. Do you have any thoughts on House of a Thousand Corpses?
I wish he just started singing Dracula at us. He's gone.
We lost him.
I guess that did it.
He'll be back.
Next thing I watched. I watched Paul Rudd.
Feature. Oh, he's back. Hold on.
He's back.
Sean, did you hear any of that?
No, I don't know what the fuck's going on with the shit with the car, but go on.
I can hear you now. You're good.
Yeah.
Do you have any? Gog's watched like 150 movies. Do you have any thoughts on Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses?
It's like the most watchable Rob Zombie movie. I'm not a fan of his in general, but like of all the shit I've seen, it's probably the best, and I still don't think it's great. Like it's, I don't know, it's just like edgelord shit to me. It doesn't for me. I'm sorry.
No, we said we didn't like it either, so you're fine.
Okay, I mean, sweet. I think you nailed it, but like, well, you like that better than Devil's Rejects?
I don't know, man. I guess it's a coin toss. Like, I'd fuck Sherry Zombie. Like, that's about as good.
I mean, yeah, dude, she's, no, come on. She checks literally every box. Like, it's like, for the kid.
I don't think he's a good director. Like, it's very slapdash. The editing's weird. His movies feel like really long, at least the ones I've seen.
Yeah,
what was the one with the fucking midget power and like what?
Oh,
what
the 30 fuck?
Lords of Salem?
31?
Oh. Yeah.
31 was horrendous. It was so bad.
I watched, what's the other one where it's like rich people are hunting people for sport in a factory. I watched that one too.
That was 31.
That was 31? Okay.
Yeah, that was 31.
I watched that. I watched Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem is a fun movie until the third act when he literally ran out of money and it starts looking like a Tim and Eric sketch. Also, Sean, did you happen to watch Candyman also in the last 2 weeks?
I watched it in the last month or so.
Oh, okay. Because
I watched it this week. I think it holds up lovely. I think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic movie, honestly. And it's from a POV for horror you didn't really get then. And I guess movies starring black people that aren't specifically about white people teaching them to be better at being black are rare. Right, so, true. I think Candyman, it's a really good fucking movie, and it's still creepy as shit. And Tony Todd straight up had all them bees in his mouth.
Yeah. My man was made of bees.
Did he really have bees in his mouth?
Yes, sir.
Oh, God.
And all up on his face and shit. Yeah, as well.
Oh, that's gross.
12-pound beard of bees for that woman, for Virginia Madsen. like I was saying, I also watched a Paul Rudd vehicle, The Curse of Michael Myers.
Oh, that movie sucks.
That
movie's so bad.
I don't think I've seen it.
That's the fifth or sixth one.
It's the fifth, because they come back in the fourth. They come back from Season of the Witch, and then they go back to form. And now this is the fallout of that. And now there's like a cult around Michael Myers.
H2O and Busta Rhymes.
Yes,
it is
yes.
And allegedly Laurie Strode is dead, but then she comes back later.
If I'm remembering this correctly, this is one of the only Halloween movies that I don't think got a theatrical release. I think this was
directly. Oh, it definitely got a theatrical release.
Oh, it did? Okay.
I remember the ads. I distinctly remember the ads for this movie on TV, like talking about the curse of Mike, and it was like Paul Rudd quietly walking through like a night market in like Halloween times. And like everyone in the movie sucks. Like everyone's despicable. And like
put that on the DVD. Everybody in this movie sucks.
Everybody in the movie sucks.
And then Paul Rudd's character is one of the two kids Laurie was babysitting the night of the original massacre.
Of course.
And he's playing it like Asperger-y and like kind of weird, and there's like a baby and there's like
burgery.
You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. It's just a funny turn of phrase. It's all.
So, and there's like a whole cult built around Michael Myers that somehow Professor Loomis has figured out.
That's what I remember about this movie. The cult.
It's just dumb as hell. And like, there's like Irish runes that like make sure the baby becomes a murderer so that it saves everyone else. And like, it's like unnecessary lore. Like Michael Myers is fun because he's just a psychopath. Like,
yeah, I think that's fun about it. Lore with Michael Myers is unnecessary and not
it's
helpful.
It's the same problem that, I mean, going back to Rob Zombie, it's why his movies don't work, because like he fundamentally doesn't understand the character, because his big change is like, oh, I'm going to make him more relatable as a child. Yeah. And it's just like, that's not what people want.
Can't relate to being fingered by William Forsythe.
Right. Like, miss me with that. Like, just give me crazy ass Michael Myers stabbing his sister with her rockin' tits. And then that's it.
Michael Myers, like, is he actually crazy? Is he a ghost? Who knows? Who cares? Like, he's
They're like making him like the devil shape. Incarnate. Like, it's just,
he's called The Shape. You know what I mean? Like, that's good enough.
Right. Like, just give me more Michael Myers. Don't let him talk. That's all you need. So, it's not good. It remains not good. It was never good. Right. And don't watch it.
It's also one of those movies that's like, and we've talked about this a lot, but the movie's really bad, but it's also like not fun to watch. Like it's not like
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, the Next Generation.
Right. Next Generation. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a blast. that one's a lot of fun. It's horrible, but it's a lot of fun to watch.
I mean, that's a crowd pleaser. That's a four quadrant banger.
Yeah.
So here's the other thing about that, and then I'll get off this Curse of Michael Myers kick. He uses, he has so many environmental kills in this movie. Like, he's like, he's like the Punisher from that Xbox game. Yeah,
man, they need to make another one of those.
I'm just begging for just an HD remix, please and thank you. Yeah, like, it awesome. Is like he takes so many people and like very bad things to them in The Curse of Michael Myers. It's just him lifting people up and then slamming them into the most dangerous wall he can find, and that's the movie. It's not great. So God, then
seminal novel, The Most Dangerous Wall.
So the last thing I watched was a 2024 film, not an A24 film, but a 2024 film called, and I had to look up the title, called A History of Evil. And I did not see the movie Civil War, the Alex Garland Civil War. But it's got similar vibes. I'm assuming it is 2045, a ultra right wing religious whatever has basically taken over the U.S. The streets are being roamed and patrolled by God fearing white militias. The
You never really know the political status of any of the belligerents in Civil War, so it's like it's up to whatever you want.
Okay, well, the belligerents, their status is very established in this movie. It is this woman, she's been a political prisoner. She wrote a book, and they locked her up, and she escaped prison. She's some woman who's like an actress slash singer slash model. She is thicker than a bowl of oatmeal. And Yeah, her and her husband and her daughter and this woman who... actually, she might have been... No, I'm not going to say that because that's racist. I'm just going to just... I don't know what she's from. I'll have to look it up before I can...
She's the lead in Baby Boy.
No. Tyrese Gibson.
Jay Jax!
See, there it is. There's the racism. No, I thought for a second she might have been the woman from Schitt's Creek, but... I'll have to look that up. Anyway, they're escaping from... They're trying to get to the Canadian border because this woman is on the run, right? She's a political prisoner. She's on the run. She's trying to get away. She's trying to lead the resistance. And they're like, hey, look, we're going to put up for the night in this old house, this old farmhouse. And no one's going to bother us because everyone thinks it's evil or haunted or some nonsense. And we're just going to keep to ourselves, and in 2 days we're out of here. Well, shit happens, like, as shit do, and their stay there is prolonged. But then it becomes, right, it starts out with, like, this Civil War, like, racism, and that doesn't leave, to be fair, like vibe. And then it turns into The Shining, because... TJ, are you going to watch the movie, or do you want me to just...
No.
So the movie turns into The Shining, where the spirits of the home, this was, like, the home of like a grand dragon of the KKK, and his ghost slowly convinces the father that he's been emasculated by his wife.
This seems kind of like to use, I know Sean didn't create this phrase, but he uses a lot. This seems kind of like a hat on a hat. Like you got this like future Civil War. Now you got this like Ulysses S. ghost going on or whatever.
Like ice cream doc. So now like he's like the house is all old and dilapidated, right? But then all of a sudden he'll walk into a room and it's like it was in like the 1950s or whenever it was.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it luxurious as it is dilapidated?
It is when he's in whatever mental state he is when whatever's going on. It is like my man's eating like homemade apple pie made with pure white flour and pure white sugar. And like this dude's just filling his head with your wife doesn't respect you. You need to murder your family. And it is because that's what.
Come on, Homer, kill your family. I'll give you a beer.
It is literally exactly that. And then what's weird about it is then the house. So you find out. So this guy tells us, I guess it's a parable. Maybe it's a metaphor. Are parables just metaphors?
No.
That,
yeah, I don't care.
He's telling the story about, like, he's like, I love the story of Br'er Rabbit. It's about, but you know what I didn't like? There's a family of foxes. There's a mama fox and a pup fox and a daddy fox. And then one day when daddy fox is out hunting, mama fox and baby fox found a rabbit caught in a trap. And instead of killing and eating that rabbit, they set it free. And it's basically just him saying at some point during his life, his wife and child must have helped an African-American person. He couldn't abide by that. So then he locked his wife up, like chained her to a, like basically just chained her up in a room and starved her out. And then like strangled Jesus. His son to death with like a plastic bag.
Yeah. Hence the cover. Before we recorded, I was telling Goggs, I had actually started watching this movie, but like not even like 2 minutes in, I got distracted and never went back to it because the cover is very striking. So that's why I started watching it, but I never went back to it.
Right. So these wraiths are still in the house and they are seen from time to time by various characters. Well, the third act of the movie just becomes an absolute mess because the father. Well, I mean, like the father has now decided that he's going to kill the family and the helper because the woman that's been leading them out of here. He goes bananas. He destroys their ham radio. He has a shootout with this other woman. And then he decides that, oh, I made a mistake, and then he kills himself. Now, he does that, and you're like, okay, that's a weird way to end it. But no, there at some point during the second act, like, militia men showed up to the house to, like, look for this woman. And the everyone else is hiding. The dad, he's a white man, so he's, you know, he's out there doing the talk, and he's the face. Go get him, Ernie. And he says, they're like, no, there's nobody here. Like, I'm just a God-fearing white guy like the rest of you. He's like, you can search in this old cellar. And apparently the militiamen find, like, all the old KKK stuff. And then now this guy's got street cred, so they love him, so they leave him alone. Well, anyway, after he blows himself away in the third act, the militiamen come back to hunt the family down through the house, the remaining members of the family. And they are picked off by the vengeful spirits of the family that were killed by the KKK guy.
That sounds stupid as shit.
It is dumb as hell.
Yeah.
And then that's the movie. Then they go to Canada. Like, and that's the movie. Like, gross. It's
the Daily Wire's version of Insidious.
Yeah. It's just like, well, right. It's just like, it was a mess. Like, it didn't know what it wanted to be and what it was not good. So that's everything I watched. Sean, did you watch anything?
I did watch stuff.
Hey.
Hey, I watched one movie, all of one TV show, and most of another TV show.
Let's go.
Pick what you want first.
All of one TV show.
I watched all of Cyberpunk Edgerunners, like,
oh,
in a row.
So good.
Like, I just sat down and watched it straight through, and it's, like, one of my favorite recent things. I fucking love it. It's done by Trigger Studio, which made a movie that Nate and I reviewed years ago called Dead Leaves. It's like 45 minute. Like, their animation is very hyper kinetic and like exaggerated, even for anime. It's a very emotional story. It's one of those like, not spoilers, but like nobody gets out alive kind of things where you're just watching these people and you know they're all doomed. Mm-hmm. But it's like super compelling. I love it. It might be the best spinoff or adaptation of a video game thing ever. I haven't seen that other.
It kind of single-handedly like kind of revitalized the video game, which was kind of amazing. Like,
yeah. And it's nice. I haven't played the game, but I know
game's amazing.
About the lore. They only really introduced one principal character from the video game, I think, towards the end. When the Atom Smasher comes in,
Smasher's in the video game. The guy that fixes their missions is in the game. Because there's a mission that they added a bunch of content after Edgerunners. You can actually get David's jacket in the game now. Yeah, it's like a little side quest you can do.
It's voiced by the guy that does fucking Gus, right? Giancarlo Esposito.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's excellent. Big fan. Strong recommend.
What was the other animated? Was there another animated show that you guys were recommending that I needed to watch besides that?
Terminator Zero.
That was it. Bingo. Yeah.
I thought you did watch that, Cox.
I watched the first episode. I didn't go back to it. I was too busy watching.
The first episode.
It was really good.
Good.
It's fucking tremendous. Better. Like, yeah. I've been busy watching schlock. I need to get back to purpose watching things. Anyways, okay. Please continue.
The most of the show I watched was the new Ryan Murphy project about the Menendez brothers. I believe it's called Monsters or something.
Oh, it's on Netflix, and, right?
Yeah. It's like, I'm not trying to knock Ryan Murphy for his, you know, his personal life. But everything he makes is, like, very queer-coded, and I'm not, like, super familiar with those boys, because that happened when we were, like, kids.
Well, also, isn't his stuff generally, like, salacious? Like, he did the Dahmer show,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah. Well, obviously, that has a lot of, like, queer...
Yeah.
But this, like, they're brothers, and it's, like, I don't know. It's real slick. It's easy to watch. I don't know that it's great, but it's functional if you just want to have something on. The performances are good. It's always nice to see Javier Bardem and stuff.
Yeah.
So, it's, you know, thumbs in the middle. It's fine. And then I also watched, I'm sure TJ talked about it already. I watched Rebel Ridge.
I think I talked about it last week. Didn't I? I feel like I did. I really liked it.
It's really fucking good. We can hit the back button, more so back button for Jeremy Saulnier. Although, like, I'm at weird, like, cross purposes with the movie because I get that he's trying to do something different and not make a Jeremy Saulnier movie as far as the violence goes.
Yeah.
But I kind of want it to also be a Jeremy Saulnier. It's like the when are we going to get to the fireworks factory kind of thing.
Well, he does break that guy's arm in a really gross way.
Yeah, it's a little treat for us.
Yeah.
But especially because it's about civil asset forfeiture and dirty cops, like, I want it to be like a bloodbath, but they do a really interesting set-piece shootout with non-lethal weapons, which I appreciated. And this dude that's the main character is going to be a fucking huge star.
Yeah, that guy's great.
He's going to be massive. Like, I could see if they were still kicking around the King the Conqueror thing, they could throw him in there.
Well, it's about to ask, is he going to get Jonathan Major? Is he like...
Did I talk about this already? It's something I read, and you got to take everything you read with a grain of salt. But the reason that they didn't recast Kang is because apparently in Jonathan Major's contract, he actually had a stipulation that, like, nobody else could play the character. And that's why... They haven't recast it, which makes a lot.
Disney's lawyers can't figure a way out of that. Like,
I'm just telling you what I read.
I feel like the mouse could figure that out,
or just pay him off.
I hate him.
I mean,
he needs to make a movie about no knock warrants next.
Yeah, that could be the sequel. I thought Rebel Ridge was excellent.
I like when they make those small movies. Like, we all loved Message from the King, which is a movie, like, nobody talks about. It was, like, you know, there and gone. Mother, or not Mother.
I Am Mother.
I Am Mother.
Right? Bad. Yeah, that was awesome.
Like, it's just everything's so fucking disposable, you know, like.
Apostle, remember that one?
Yeah.
That was on Netflix.
Yeah.
That was great. So.
But no, it's a very good movie if you just want to sit down and watch a movie. I'm up. It was fucking the most insane part about it was I texted TJ. I was like, because you know how we always talk about every movie somebody's favorite movie. They were interviewing this guy at GQ, and I was like, I texted TJ. I was like, some movies everybody's favorite movie Dante Must Die difficulty level, and they asked him what his favorite movie was, and he said Safe House. Which seems like an insane thing to say.
Yeah.
Safe House.
Dogs, you remember Safe House with Ryan Reynolds and Denzel Washington?
Exactly who I'm
doing. Wow.
I think that's all I watched.
Who would like... Okay.
I think his name is something Pierre, right? That's his name?
Aaron Pierre,
yeah.
TJ, what did you watch?
I'm TJ. I watched three things.
Three things?
Oh, my
of, I mean, three pretty interesting things overall. I watched this movie called Charisma. It is more a like kind of meditation on ideas than it is a movie. Like it's tough. I thought it was interesting. It's kind of slow, but like by the end of it, like there's a lot to make you think. Basically about this cop who's like a negotiator who, after fucking up a negotiation, decides he's just gonna like leave the world and go out into the woods, and then he finds all these people that are defending this tree that's called Charisma, but the tree is actually poisoning the woods around it. And then basically there's these different factions, like some people want the tree, some people want to destroy the tree, and they're like a kind of ideologies around it, and he's kind of like the chaotic neutral in the middle. And like it's a meditation on like society at large, and it's a very, very odd movie. And the go ahead.
What's the setting? Like, is it now times? Is it like?
Yeah, no, it's modern. Yeah, this is the same director that made oh my god, my brain. He made Pulse, which I really liked, and he made Jesus Christ the movie. I talked about this movie a couple of weeks ago. He made the movie Cure, which I think is like a fucking masterpiece. But I will say that this one is more like it's kind of tough. I feel like it's a little too impenetrable. Like it's one of those movies that's like it's fun to discuss, but like somebody I don't really. It's not really like. I don't know how I feel about it as a movie. I don't know. It's definitely something I got to rewatch.
Did you like it?
I did, but I didn't love it. And I think like parts of it drag pretty hard because like, again, like a lot of characters' motivations are like kind of up in the air and like their decisions don't make a lot of sense. But again, they're not, the movie is like surrealist, but like it's a surrealist movie without being like visually surreal. So I mean,
it's surreal in concept.
TJ Bell. It is very Brunel-like, his later work. Like it's very similar to that, where it's, again, it's more about like the things he's talking about than the actual movie. But
it is reminiscent of later Brunel quotes local dipshit.
Yeah, exactly. But it stars the same lead actor as Cure, and he was also in that movie that came out earlier this year where he's like a janitor, and it's what the hell is that movie called? Like Normal Days or something like that? I don't know.
Oh, like one Good Day. I still want to see that. Wenders.
Yeah, that actor is great. Wim Wenders is great. Paris, Texas is amazing. Anyway, I also watched a movie called Burst City. It's an older Japanese movie. I think it came out in 89.
Burst City, bitch.
Well, I've been meaning to watch this movie for about 20 years because this movie always gets brought up when, like, Tetsuo the Iron Man is brought up as, like, kind of like a seminal piece of, like, underground Japanese filmmaking. And I didn't really, I think, like, it's interesting, but it's also, like, kind of a mess. Like, the movie is fun because, like, it's all about these, like, basically, it's about these punk rock bands that are they're also like street gangs, and then they, like, a nuclear power plant is going to be built in the middle of their city, and they like revolt against it. And that's a very condensed part. That's a very condensed way of telling you this story.
Blu-ray cover's fucking sick though.
It takes so long to get there because like, every actor in the movie is at, like, all the bands that are represented in the movie are actual, like, or were actual bands in the Japanese punk rock scene. And there's a lot of scenes of just them, like, playing music and, like, being punks, you know, smoking and drinking and drag racing and stuff. So it's kind of like, it's very, very loose, but I kind of love the energy the movie has. 'Cause like, when it gets itself together, there's some like really cool shots. And it's you can tell that it was done on like Tetsuo the Iron Man, done probably on like a $200 budget.
But like, so it's punk in theme and production.
100%. That is a great way to describe it. And I didn't love it. I understand its importance. Like, I can see why people like it, but you
want to love it because it's like,
yeah, I mean, of... I think it's an important piece of like Japanese film history. I can see why people hold it in such high regard, but like, for my money, I'd rather have something like Wild Zero that also kind of represents the same thing, but like is more like, while it's still insane, it's more coherent as like a movie. This is kind of like barely a movie, but it is fun. And there's like, I wouldn't recommend it. I would recommend it because it's also short. I think it's like 86 minutes long. But that being said, it would have been better if it was 60 minutes long. You could cut time out of it. So that's Birth City. And then the last thing I watched is a movie that just came out. It's called The Substance. It's like
a stuff.
It's like a surrealist, like body horror movie.
It doesn't sound great.
No, I liked it. But the director made a movie. When I saw the director's name, I was like, I don't know who that is. But then I looked up their
IMDb. Revenge, right? That movie sucks.
I thought I liked Revenge. I remember liking that movie.
No, or am I thinking of A Promising Young Woman? They came out around the same time.
Oh, I liked Revenge. I feel like I enjoyed Revenge. No, is Revenge, I did not like. Pregnant? Yeah. Yeah, I believe that so. I gotta watch it again. I don't know. I remember liking Revenge because I saw the poster. I was like, wait, I think I like that movie. But anyway, this
love Revenge.
The Substance is
your favorite emotion.
The Substance is a mixed bag, but overall, I like the movie.
Talking about it like it's fucking Possessor or something.
No, it's not. Oh. It's not. And here's the thing, right? And I said this a little bit in the TikTok video I made, but I think that this movie is like baby's first art house movie. Like this movie is like, I think this movie is what people that watch like normal movies will watch this and think it's Titane, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Is like, it one of those like, I didn't mean to cut you off, but is it one of those like, isn't it awful how women are treated when they age? It's like, yeah, we know.
I mean, the thing is, the metaphor is like, I mean, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but like the everything in this movie is very skin deep, right? Like it's not trying to be like obtuse and deep. And I'm not saying you necessarily have to be, but like the metaphor is right there. Visually, it's interesting. I thought it's really, really gross and it's fun. My only issue with the movie is that it's way more of like a horror comedy. And I don't think the comedic bits work at all. Like there's one scene in particular that drags and drags and drags, and like to me, and I know we talk about this all the time, and it's not fair to judge a movie based on the movie you kind of wish it was, but like I wish this movie was like a little grittier and like a little less goofy, because I feel like the goofiness kind of takes away a little bit of the shock value of it. It's almost like I feel like, and what do I know? I feel like the director was a little scared to be Brandon Cronenberg and was like, well, we're going to make it silly. So that kind of takes some of the teeth off of it. Like, yeah, I mean, like if Possessor is a great example, right? If you had that eye poking out scene and then you had immediately just like some like Turbo Kid-esque, just like blood fountain pouring out of his eye, it kind of nullifies the violence, right?
Takes like the teeth when they out, do, right.
What's the Kick-Ass move? And I know it kind of works in there, but it's like this horrible like bloodbath, but they're playing like the banana splits underneath of it.
So yeah, that's the Hit Girl scene. Yeah. That's great. But like that works. I'm not saying that this doesn't work. I just didn't. Comedy
works because
didn't
that movie's silly anyway. Like,
yeah, but this it didn't work for me in this movie because like I don't know. I just felt like. It felt like a message movie that didn't have a whole lot to say, I guess is what I'm trying, like my only problem with it, but I did enjoy watching it. And I thought that like, I loved how fucking disgusting it got. Like it got real gross, like real gross. And then also like from like the whole movie is like absurdist. Like the dialogue is like super absurd and like all the situations are like hyper realistic or whatever. Like, nothing is taken very seriously. Everybody's kind of, you know, stifled in their dialogue and all. But there's a part in this movie where, and it's a clone movie too, technically. So what happens is, like, Demi Moore is this aging actress, and she's basically like that. She's done, right? She's like in her 50s, like her career is over. And she gets in a car accident, and then in the middle of getting tested to make sure she's okay, some guy's like, oh, you'd be a perfect candidate for this. And they give her a thumb drive that talks about this medicine called the substance. And basically, like, you take this, and it doesn't explain what happens, but basically it creates like a cell division. So basically it creates a new version of you that's better. But then there's rules that you have to follow. Like, you have to feed it. You have to fucking change back, or you have to basically switch back over every 7 days. And that part of the movie is like the most interesting part, like the whole like escalating bad decisions that happens in the movie. Again, the only thing that holds back to me is the comedy. I did not care for the comedy. I didn't think it really worked there. I will say that Margaret Qualley, or however you say her name, is like unbelievably gorgeous, and like this movie basically is just like 90% her naked, and just when she's not naked, it's just the camera is just on her ass, because that's like the whole, because that she's like the idealized person that Demi Moore wants to be. And hilariously, the celebrity, right? Demi Moore used to be like a Richard Simmons like fitness person, right? So when Margaret Qualley takes over, she becomes like it, cause the Demi Moore segments are very like 90s, you know, aerobics, like they're in a bikini, but it's still very like PG. But when Margaret Qualley takes over, like, she's in like this like cutout bikini, and they're like close up on their asses, and they're like twerking. And that part was pretty fucking funny, I have to say. But like, also the concept that like one of the biggest celebrities in the country is a fitness person on TV. I was like, what the fuck? Like, what planet?
Shout out
like,
to ESPN2 and Kiana Tom, because that shit's still up there.
Is it really?
No, I'm anyway. Saying like I still remember it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, but the movie is not bad. I think like it got a little overhyped for me, but that's really more on me than the movie. But like, I mean, I think Sean referred to the same thing. People are talking about it like, you know, again, it was like Possessor. A lot of people are saying it's like the top film of the year for them, and I'm like, I do think it's good. I think it might end up in my like top 10.
It ain't better than I saw the TV glow, and I
haven't No, and not even close. But again, like, I saw the TV glow has teeth. Like, there's intentionality, and there's a lot of emotional weight there. And I feel like this movie could have, The Substance could have that, but I feel like it chooses not to. I think it feels like it got scared, and it needed to, like, censor itself. And I could be wrong, but that's kind of the feeling that I got. Like, the movie I want, like, I don't know if anybody would watch, you know, like I want The Substance directed by Brandon Cronenberg, you know, and it's kind of interesting because like Brandon Cronenberg's movie, Antiviral, is very similar in tone to The Substance, but I think it actually has more to say, and I think it's a better movie, but I don't think, you know, most people I think wouldn't watch that because it's so nihilistic and hard to watch, whereas this is like, at the end of the day, it's like, oh, it's goofy, like,
oh, it's just a movie,
her tit fell off, you know what I mean, like, it's, yeah, I don't know, it is disgusting. Well, also, I don't know,
a better version
mixed,
of you
mixed,
a
bit, mixed feelings about the film.
What?
Oh, Sean just turned into a werewolf. What'd you say? You said a better version of you. Uh-oh.
He went dog soldier on us.
Sean went blood drunk. I've been playing too much Bloodborne. I beat Bloodborne again, by the way.
Hey.
For like classic. The fifth time. And now I'm in the middle of playing through Sekiro again. So
I need to beat Sekiro. I never beat
Sekiro. It's so good. What were you saying, Sean? Oh. Nope. I want to get his point out before we move on.
I mean, I'm good either way.
What's up?
What did you say, Sean?
What were you trying to say? Sorry, yeah, the dog boots problem. The building a better version of UV with a clone is kind of also the plot of Duel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So.
Duel's also. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up because Duel makes its point and is also like kind of silly. Like, then the humor lands.
But Riley Stearns is like actually very funny. Like, he plays that really well. But he can make a serious movie. Fucking Fractures is not funny.
Fractures isn't funny at all. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't want to make it seem like I didn't like this movie. I enjoyed it. I think it was just a little overhyped, and I have little naggy problems with it. But overall, I did enjoy it. And I said this also in the TikTok, but this movie, you know how sometimes, like, Gogs, when we saw Fall Guy, right?
Yeah.
Remember how they had the director and Ryan Gosling were like, hey, we hope you enjoy, welcome to AMC, and we hope you enjoy this movie.
Right.
They did that with The Substance, which I thought was absolutely insane. Like, it's like, hey, I'm Demi Moore, and I'm Margaret Qualley, we hope you enjoy The Substance. And it's like, it would be like if you watch, like, Titan, and they're like, hey, we're at AMC.
I'm some French guy.
Yeah. Like, it's so weird. It was a lady, actually, you sexist pig.
I mean, there was a man in the film.
Only one.
Yeah, he danced.
I know, there's a whole bunch. Nice. There's a bunch of gay firemen at the end of that movie. Yeah.
I love that movie.
Also, Titan 2? We're putting out Titan 2. Whatever. How do you say 2 in French?
Give me the Titan Cars crossover we're all begging for.
Give me the Titan universe. Just make more Titans, please. That director, I can't remember her name. Julia something or other. She needs to make another movie because she's made two absolute bangers.
Did she make Rubber?
No, she made Raw. You ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which I love.
Is that the cannibalism movie?
The cannibalism metaphor for lesbianism college movie. Yeah, that movie fucking rocks.
I like all those words.
So good. Well, actually, the lead actress in Raw, she is the girlfriend of the killer in Titan in the very beginning. Remember the girl that she takes him back to her house, and then the girl murders all her roommates? That's her.
She was dope.
Yeah, that movie fucking rules. I feel like maybe that underlining that is that a little bit of my problem with The Substance. Like, I wanted the amount of attention that The Substance is getting that Titan should have got. You know what I mean? I know why, because it's not in English, doesn't have any like known actors outside of France. But like, to me, like, Titan is like 10 times better than The Substance. Like, it's just a much better movie.
And it has shit to say.
Right. It's
in French.
And it also is like, I mean, The Substance kind of stumbles because it's trying to do 10 things at once, whereas like Titan is like 15 different movies at the same time, but it pulls it off really well.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like I'm overly negative of The Substance. It's still good.
When people are saying, oh my God, like, because it's like a genre that you love, right? Like a weird body horror high concept movie. And it's just kind of like, oh, well.
The problem is it's not high concept. It's not even like close to being high concept. And I don't know. Again, like, it's fine. I did enjoy it, but like you just said, Sean, like, I think I had high expectations because I love body horror, and you know, it's not what I wanted it to be.
Brandon Cronenberg or better.
Yeah, give me Brandon Cronenberg, give me Shinya Tsukimoto. Like, he should have directed this movie. I would have loved to have seen his take on this film. But anyway, let's get into Coraline, because we need to get off, because I need to watch my beloved Commanders lose.
I'm always trying to get off.
Who hadn't seen Coraline? I think Alec was the only one that hadn't seen it.
I had not seen Coraline.
You haven't seen it? Wow, okay.
No, I mean, I've seen it now.
Yeah.
I was required to by the show.
But legally, yes.
Yeah, contractually, I had to watch.
What happened in Coraline?
What happens in Coraline?
I do love how everybody mispronounces her name all the time. Like,
it's pretty good.
My favorite character, the Russian acrobat mouse guy, and he kept Coraline. Yeah. Who calls who? It's Coraline.
Voiced by, what's his name? Swearingen.
What? Excuse
from,
me?
Ian McShane.
Ian McShane.
Oh, that's who that was?
Yep. So Coraline is a movie about a girl by the name of Coraline and her family.
Shocker.
Makes some sort of I don't know, is it like a gardening catalog where the mom is like the artist and the dad's the writer, like he's coming up with plot for a some sort of catalog. Anyway,
it's they something move. To that effect. Yeah, I mean, sure.
I'm just assuming it's not explicitly said, I don't think, but I'm assuming they're either down on their luck or running from
I gotta
the
be
law.
Perfectly honest, I never really paid much attention like to that aspect of it.
Yeah,
I just,
the setup, yeah. I've never, it's just that like typical like I always that writer moves the country kind of like
right.
setup for
yeah.
me. And I just kind of let it roll.
It's kind of the same. Did anybody ever watch? Did you guys watch Inside Out? The OG Inside Out, same plot
no.
setup.
No.
Like, their it's family is moving across country somewhere else, and now they have to make do. So the daughter is trying to figure out what they're going to do in this weird pink apartment building. And her name is Coraline. I think we stated that earlier. And so weird, you know, there's some weird shit. She meets her weird, goofy neighbor. And his name is like Hubie, I think, or something like that. Some
yeah,
Hubie.
Yeah, Hubie.
Hubie, and he like gives her some creepy doll with buttons for eyes, and she's trying to like hang out with her parents or do whatever, and her parents don't want her around, or they're preoccupied with their shit, so she's got to go make do. And I thought it was going to go all Pan's Labyrinth on you, but it doesn't really. It means she goes and visits her new wacky neighbor situation. So her upstairs neighbor is a man who trains rats for the Russian circus, voiced by Ian McShane.
Aren't they mice? Or are they rats?
Rats are just big mice.
YB is the kid's name, by the way.
They YB, not UB. Who's UB?
Yep. What does she keep saying? She's like, why UB born or something?
Why, yeah,
something like that.
She's dragging old boy. He's just trying to get some.
I love so his then, like skull mask that he wears the whole time.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah, he looked like a nightmare when he first showed up. I was like, oh, this house is haunted as fuck. And no, he's just a kid on a BMX bike. So then. So she visits that guy and he's like, hey, I got rats and mice and welcome to the situation. And then she visits like the crazy broads, the sisters that live downstairs, and they dress up like mermaids.
My favorite characters. The like retired like showgirls / question mark prostitutes. Like yeah. Also, this is the only this movie explained to me what reading the tea leaves meant. I've always heard that yeah. expression, didn't know what yeah. it meant. So yeah.
Yeah. So then they like so now she's like, you know, this is her life now. This is me now. And she's just dealing with it. She doesn't ever actually go to school or anything. And she's missing her old friends. And then one night she gets like basically like lured into during her dreams this parallel universe that lives beyond the wall. It's very Alice in Wonderland. Like it's now she's in this world where her parents pay attention to her and her mom's a good cook. And like the house is perfectly kept and it's like, it's great, but it's like, it's everything is great except that her parents now have, everyone has buttons. Like, what's the name? YB doesn't speak. And the dad plays the piano and it's just, it's idealized reality.
Well, yeah, he plays the, like this
well,
weird,
the piano
like,
plays him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He plays like this it's weird like, mechanical piano.
There's two things it makes me think of. One of them is the Clive Barker children's book, A Thief of Always, where he goes to that house where it's like
oh,
every
yeah.
holiday, all year, every holiday throughout the day and it ages years and like everything's great, but it's like really sick underneath. Also the opening of Blue Velvet. Where he's like, TJ, you know what I'm talking
yeah,
about. Where
I
it's
can,
like
I
everything's like idyllic
yeah.
or whatever, and then it just kind of pans down through the worms and the dirt and all that shit that's underneath of it.
Yeah, you anyway, know that sorry. There's something wrong, you know. And I think this movie, you know, just to get into us now, why not? I think this movie does a really great job at introducing a lot of like horror elements without being too abrasive to like kids. Like I feel like
well,
this is
yeah.
one of the few movies that I feel like this is like something everyone can enjoy, you know.
And they do a great job of introducing like it from the POV of a kid where it's like, well, her parents were fine. There wasn't anything really wrong with how they were treating them. It's just like she needs this idealized where she's like the center of everything all the time, you know, or she thinks that's what she wants.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And then by the end of the movie, right, you kind of learn, well, we'll get there. She kind of appreciates what she had, and then...
Also, while you're bringing up the piano, that song, and it's this one of the guys from They Might Be Giants that does that song, has been stuck in my head for 20 years, and it will not go away no matter what.
The music in this movie is very good.
Yeah. So, blah, 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 blah. So Coraline is eventually, she goes and visits this alternate reality, and it sounds like they want her to stay, and it seems like a great thing. And then she's presented with a choice. Like, she can stay, but to stay, she has to give up her eyes, and she has to replace her eyes with buttons. And she's like, nah, I'm good. But then new mommy gets angry about this, and basically throws her into a little prison where you find ghost children. I think there were some rumors about this pink house and like it's scary and like the owner's sister vanished forever ago and blah, blah, like sort of like it level kind of lore. And so you find out that this person, this woman who ends up turning into like sort of an evil, crazy spider needle lady has just basically feeds on children. So
when she changes into her like final form, she looks friggin' terrifying. Like the weird long fingers and
Feels like real video gamey, but not like in a bad way. You know what I mean? Like the character and like the evolution of it. Like kind of like a Alice, the American McGee type deal.
I could definitely.
But she got a second phase. She's called the Beldam, and she uses so that little rag doll that Coraline got earlier was actually like a drone, basically, like to spy on her, so she would know what to entice her with to bring her to this world. What happens next? She manages to escape. She gets out, and they find, and she's got to. I forget. She communes with the ghost, or she talks to the
sister. You forgot to bring up the cat. The cat.
Oh, right.
The cat. By
Keith David, the cat.
Yeah, there's a cat that's in the real world, but the cat has the innate ability to travel between the dream world and the real world. But in the dream world, the cat can talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like Morgana from Persona 5.
Actually, yes.
Right. And the cat is voiced by Keith David, and Keith David rules.
Yeah.
So she sees the sisters that live downstairs, the stripper gypsy sisters, and they give her this like stone that lets her like see, I guess, like see the truth. And then now things are become completely unhinged because now the evil monster that lives in the walls has kidnapped her parents and she's got to save them. And she's also got to like release the souls of the children who have been captured by this monster. So this part is very video gamey because she has to go through all these different Luigi's Mansion levels to find the hidden thing and get their eyeballs back or their singular eyeball back.
The visions of the ghost children too are pretty like that's pretty creepy, right? Like they're missing their eyes. Like god damn.
Yeah. She makes a deal. Right, she makes a deal with the monster. Something like she's like, listen, if I can find all the eyeballs and if I can save my parents, I win. But if I can't, you get to have my eyes and I stay here forever. Excuse me. And somehow, for some reason, and even though this woman, even though Coraline has no leverage, she gets a clue out of this monster, I guess, because it's classic monologuing, like it thinks it's better than her. So it tells her that it's like, one of the eyes is hidden in each one of like the fancy places that she designed for Coraline. So using the stone thing to like search around, she finds the eyes, releases the spirits. There's like a giant, there's all sorts of weird visuals. There's like the dad is turning into a pumpkin at this point, and like he's like on like a mechanical praying mantis monster, like out in the garden. Like it gets like the whole place is going tits up and it's not great. But she realizes she saves her parents. She finds her parents are trapped in a snow globe. She saves all the kids, frees her parents, escapes through the door, realizes she has to destroy the key so the bedlam can never come back. So there's always been like this well, because the very beginning of the movie, she's like using a divining rod to find water. And I forget what was the story around the, didn't Wybie give her some like something about that well?
Well, she was looking for it. She was looking for it before like anything. I forget why, but yeah, she was looking for it at the beginning. That's how Wybie and her meet in the very beginning, because she's looking for that well.
Yeah. But anyway, they defeat the Bedlam. They throw the key away, right? And that's, and yeah, like I guess a chunk of the weird, like, needly severed hand is like chasing her around. Everything is destroying the well. Everything's good. Everybody's happy. Here's the part that I did not understand, and maybe I missed it when I watched it 2 weeks ago. Once she freed the kids' souls,
mm-hmm.
did they come back to the real world like her parents did? Did they come back to the real world a la Jumanji?
I don't think they ever. I think they're just at peace. They don't think they show them coming back.
Okay.
But you're right. That is important to point out that the parents, when everything gets back to normal, the parents don't remember anything. They don't know anything. So.
Like the parents didn't realize they were captured and right.
Yeah.
They just came in from a snowstorm or something. And that's it. Now everybody's happy at this haunted apartment building that's maybe been cleansed of evil.
Yep.
And that's Coraline.
That's the movie. Easy breezy. Coraline.
I don't know about you guys, but this is one of those movies like I love, but like I don't really have much to say about it.
I kind of felt the same way. I will say that I wanted to point out that I think, and I've said this for
the years, Coraline and years and years. Other mother's kind of hot when she's all trad wifed up.
Harry.
Either. I mean, I'm not. Yes.
This is
thanks, Gogs.
This You're movie welcome. Was directed by Harry Selick and Harry
James
Selick,
and the Giant Peach guy.
And he's the actual director of Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah.
And I don't think he gets enough credit. I think everybody thinks that his work is Tim Burton's work, and it's not really fair. I think he's a hell of a director. And I think visually this movie is great. Like, I love the visual style of this movie.
Yeah. Like, I know I've talked about it a million times, but there's a featurette I saw where it's this woman knitting all the fucking clothes for the stop motion characters, and it's just like so bonkers.
Imagine. Yeah.
So wait, know what else Henry Selick directed?
Mm.
Monkey Bone.
Yeah. I think we talked about that one. Return of
Champion. We watched it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because remember all the weird, like, characters when they went to the afterlife or whatever? Yeah.
That Monkey movie Bone rules.
Fucking rocks.
That movie kicks a pile of ass.
Yeah, that movie's
great. It was the best thing to happen in 2001.
But there you go. Like, Henry Selick is fantastic, and I feel like he's definitely not, like, a household name, but he's made a lot of great stuff, and I feel like he doesn't get the credit he deserves.
Like, I feel like if I had, maybe this is a better thing for Gogs, like, if I had kids, this would be on heavy rotation with, like, you know, the Iron Giant and the newer Spider-Man movies and stuff. But, like, as an adult, like, I love the movie, but I have no reason to, like, revisit it much.
I think this would be a great, this is a great Halloween movie for kids.
Yeah.
You know what
I mean? Like Paranorman.
Yeah. So Vance had actually been invited to go see this movie in the theater because I think it just got re-released.
Yeah.
And he couldn't go. It didn't work out. But I was like, oh, well, I've never seen it, so I should watch it. I don't know if it would be his vibe. It's a little heavy, I think, kind of for him.
Yeah.
And I don't like, I think it's all right, but I don't like, as a parent, I don't think this is not going to make it into my, like, oh, I got to show my kids this. We can watch The Winter Soldier again. Like, that's fine.
Well,
like,
I'd just be a worse dad than you, quote Gogs.
Yeah. Mm. Pretty way terrible father consistently.
Way to go, Gogs.
Nothing I can do about it. It's how I am. I'm as God made me, sir.
But there's nothing really to pick at with this, right? Like, it's not, like, deeply thematic or anything. It's not, like, I hate to... Yeah, this movie's like I'm kind of cursed at this point for me by Mary and Max last time because it's like, oh man.
Oh, well,
like,
that movie was too good. That's the problem,
like, right?
So yeah, Mary and Max kind of ruined this the whole month because that movie.
Yeah.
But this movie's, I mean, it's solid, and like I said, I do think that it, I think this where this movie succeeds for me is that I feel like it is a genuinely well crafted like horror story, but it's not like inaccessible for like a younger audience. Like I think like it's hard to write horror for kids, and I think this works really well. And also it has just enough of that charm that Neil Gaiman has when he's on his game. Like I think that you can tell that this is one of his stories. Like this feels like a Sandman side story. You know what I mean? This definitely could be.
Henry Selick should make a Death the Time of Your Life stop motion movie.
Oh my God, that'd be amazing. I'd watch that in a heartbeat. You know, apparently in the mid 2000s, I forget which anime studio wanted to approach DC to make a Death anime, and they rejected it, which
they're like, no, that sounds like a good idea. Fuck yeah, that.
Because it would have been, I forget the creative people involved with it, but it would have been, like, it was somebody like really good.
The Junji Ito.
I can't wait for that. They got an Uzumaki anime coming out in October. It looks amazing. All right, well, let's get into Five Knuckle Shuffles because the game's about to start anyway. So, Gog, since you were the only person that hadn't seen it,
it's an 8. For me,
I mean, like, oh, okay, that's still. I mean, the way you're I thought you were gonna knock it into like 6 territory.
No. It's well made. It's like it's a perfectly cromulent movie. Like I can appreciate what everyone else probably holds it. Like I can appreciate it would be elevated on a pedestal, but it's just like I was reflecting on it. And I was like, it's good. It's. You know, it's well made, it's well acted, it's well directed, it's well crafted. But like, hey, you have no desire to ever watch it again. So, you know, it's an 8. I think it is suffering from coming off of the heels of Mary and Max because I feel like that is a movie I will rewatch. Like that movie was too good for us at this point. So there we go. But, I mean, perfectly fine. Perfectly fine film. Sean.
It's an 8 for me, too. I don't know. It's a movie. Like, I hate to, you know, also bring in the Mary and Max thing. But, like, it's great. Like, it's super well executed. I was reading something about it. It's like widely considered one of the best animated films of all time. I'm like, I don't know, man. That's a fucking stretch. I feel like I haven't seen a lot of animated films. Like,
I mean, if you're talking about like on a technical level, it may be like as a stop motion film, like technically it looks really, really good. But like, I mean, I don't think that means like, is this movie better than like, is Akira in the running in this?
Cause is it Perfect Blue or
any of this Khan movies? Yeah. I mean,
It's almost like if you're like, fucking Horizon Forbidden Dawn, one of the greatest video games ever made. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, it's good. Like, it's very well executed. I really it looks great, but. Yeah,
I don't understand why they're remastering it.
But I just like I wish I had more to say about the movie, but I just don't.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way after I finished watching it. I was like, damn, I don't know how much we're gonna have to talk about. But I do like the movie a lot. I like the
TJ. Are you kind of in the same spot as everybody?
Yeah, it's an 8 for me, dog. I really like. I do really enjoy this movie though, and I've watched this movie a bunch. I mean, I've watched this movie a handful of times. And again, like not to beat a dead horse, but like. As someone that's like, I mean, very cynical about horror movies and like horror storytelling in general, like I feel like it's hard to find something that's like a crowd pleaser that I'll like because I'm such a dickhead about that kind of thing. And I like this movie a lot. I think this movie tickles a lot of things that I like. And I love, I mean, some of the sequences in this movie are just drop dead gorgeous. Like the sequence where you see in the dream world the mice, their little show, like that looks so good. And like I love the character designs. I just love everything about it. I love when she realizes it's a dream world and she literally like walks a loop and like the world starts like going away. Like I love that whole concept. There's a lot to like about this movie. I feel like it's one of those things where I'm glad they never made a sequel, but I could have seen like a lesser, like I could have seen somebody else come in and make a sequel to this. Like I think there's more to, to be done with this world, but I'm glad they never did. But yeah, it's an 8. It's an 8 for me, dog. Sean, I guess it's your
pick. I mean, that's a certified good ass movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. It's just like it's why I used to have the two good rule. It's that sometimes like a movie just there's nothing really wrong with it. So it's not that fun. It's not fun to like pick apart. There's nothing, absolutely exceptional like Max and Mary. You know, it's tough to discuss. So,
like,
yeah.
If we were a show that like we were all stop motion animators, I feel like we'd have a lot to talk about. You know what I mean? But it's just like
we'd also be insufferable.
We're already insufferable. I don't know, TJ, if you can find that movie Junkhead or whatever, the one I sent you, I want to see that. If not, let me know and I'll pivot.
Do you know what,
Japan.
It's called Junkhead?
I believe so.
Do you know what year it came out or anything? Or like
Japan.
Let me see.
2021.
Oh, then it probably will. I'm looking right now. It's not where my first place I'd look. Just give me, I'll let you know. I'll text you if I can't find it and we'll figure something else out. All right. Well, that's the show, everybody. We will see you. Wow. It's 2 hours long. I was like, maybe it's going to be a short and that's why I can't find it. I've it does like related searches. I thought it was Hour of the Wolf, which is a weird Bergman movie, but no, it's The Wolf House, which is a very odd stop motion movie, which I also recommend. All right, I'm sure I can find it.
Enjoy the one time Washington will be on a Monday night.
Hey, no, I hate when we always do really really bad in primetime games historically,
and also every other game.
Yeah, well, yeah, also that.
All right.
Hey, well, you know, what are you going to do? All right. See you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Glad about.